Well, once again, good morning, everybody. It's time for a conversation with John Orr. The number here is at the station is 503-325-0010. That's 325-0010. This is a call-in talk show. We invite your comments, your opinions, succinctly put, and if you rely upon sources, hopefully they are reliable ones, and we always believe in civil discourse among the disagreements that may or may not occur. We invite that expression. A great service KMUN provides for allowing people to speak their minds. So that's the topic today. That topic today is the deer. What should we do about them? And as by way of background, I would just say that speaking from personal experience as a resident of Astoria, though this topic and the experiences certainly shouldn't be confined to this area, anywhere within the listening audience that have had to deal with this issue, is we see increasing numbers of deer with every passing year, and they're feeding and fattening themselves on local shrubs, fruit trees, flowers, gardens, and what have you. And there appears to be no plan or government concern for controlling the numbers. I'm kind of curious whether other people are alarmed at what I have seen is these increasing numbers I see on a typical evening's walk, 10, 15, sometimes 20 groups of five or six just hovering around and completely, oblivious. We can always talk about, well, the human habitat has encroached upon the wild habitat, but things are out of balance. That's just a given because we have moving up to 8 billion people on the planet, and we continue to reproduce. So that's just a given, it seems to me. The discussion is how do we find a balance? And my own personal opinion, just my opinion, is things are out of balance with deer populations. Doing a little reading on the wildlife situation is that if they don't have predators and hunting is not allowed, they overpopulate. They will reduce the feedstock and denude vegetation and create problems for certain species of plants. But more concern to people that really love the animals is that they are more susceptible to disease when they're bunched in closer population densities without natural predators or population control to weed out the weak. It'll weaken the genetic stock, I guess, is what they may say about that. So this is the second in a series of programs on wildlife in Oregon and on the North Coast. So we invite your calls if you have some special expertise, such as working at Fish and Wildlife or as a hunter or as somebody who perhaps feeds the deer or objects to your neighbors feeding the deer. Please give us a call with your thoughts and your insights or observations. The number here, 503-325-0010, 503-325-0010. So that's kind of the program show warm-up here at 933 on KMUN 91.9. While I'm waiting for people to gather up their questions, I guess I will just take a look at one issue of the Daily Historian from Friday, November 16th, 2018. And it said, Astoria police notice increase in deer-related calls. I guess I counted one of those. We were at home late one evening, and we heard some rattling in the backyard. Then it sounded like, well, not once, but twice, something bumped up against the window. So being concerned, because it didn't happen once, it happened twice. Might have happened a third time we called the police. Turns out they were just a bunch of bucks frolicking in our backyard. Our backyard is, on the south-facing slope, and they have chosen our yard to bed down on a common basis. They also walk up a hill, and they're undermining the hillside because the erosion and the traffic right on the steepest part of the hill. And I look around my neighborhood, and I see people trying to have flowers, people trying to have gardens, and it's not working because they're basically undergoing the expense of buying plants and nurturing these plants just end up in the belly of the deer. That can't be too gratifying for for our neighbors here in other parts of the North Coast community. If you find yourself in that group of people that don't appreciate your efforts being turned towards the feeding of the deer, then give us a call and tell us how you feel about it. Tell us what you'd like to have done about it. Tell us what you think the problem is. 503-325-0010. So anyway, turning back to the article in the Daily Historian, it says that nobody knows how many deer. This is written by Katie Frankwitz. I hope it's okay to quote your article. Nobody knows how many deer live in Astoria, but the population may be on the rise. Well, there's no question about that. I can just see, as I've taken my walks from year to year. People have advocated for the deer in front of the city boards when vacation rentals drew extra traffic to their neighborhood. They have wondered why a ban on feeding deer and other wildlife doesn't apply to feral cats. They have noted that 3-foot-high fences do not dissuade deer from jumping into gardens and devouring everything in sight. The Parks and Recreation specifically selects plants like rhododendrons that deer won't eat. Well, that would be also something that would be welcome if people who have knowledge of plants and deer-resistant plants, so to speak, would care to call in and provide information. This article says rhododendron. They don't seem to care for rosemary bushes. They sort of nibble a little bit, but not much at lavender. They definitely go hammer and tong at my blueberry plants. It's kind of discouraging because I have such an affection for blueberries and blueberry plants to see them nibbled away. But anyway, give us your calls. Give us your thoughts. This is Conversation with John R. Actually, it seems less like a conversation and a monologue at this point. But we welcome your calls, 325-0010. And I suppose reflecting on a conversation I had with a former city councilor on the subject when I raised my concerns, that the city of Astoria and perhaps other municipalities as well have so much on their plate right now that they can't really be troubled with developing a policy or a plan, or maybe given limited resources, or maybe they don't perceive the concern on the part of the public as being significant because they haven't heard from them at meetings. Whatever the case may be, the situation, I think, deserves a full discussion and airing out. At some point, I hope to have somebody from ODFW on the show to just talk about it. What's the plan? We have blacktail deer here. They're secretive creatures. I believe we are drawing them in from the forest, the surrounding forest, adjacent to the urban areas. We're drawing them in because they don't have to deal with the cougars, although the cougars may be already drawn to this area because that's where the food is. Like, why do you rob the banks? Because that's where the money is. So that's an additional concern. Oh, looks like we have a caller. Let's see if we get the volume up. This is Conversation with John Orr. Thanks for your call. What's your comment or question?
Well, I have a couple of comments. I think I probably am diametrically opposite from your point of view on the deer. I think the deer are nice. I like seeing them. I also doubt very much that their numbers have increased in town very much over the last 5 or 10 years. They seem to be about the same. I think our destruction of habitat by clear cutting all around our community reduces a lot of the habitat for the deer. And I know they don't live in deep, dark forests, but you look at the slope out near Harmony Lane out just east of town. Mm-hmm. Take a look at that slope. Deer aren't going to be able to walk around on that, what they've left behind there. It's ruined. And the deer are being the ones that should have the complaint. The human population is increasing slightly in town, and every time it does, they build more and exclude more wildlife. And what we don't need to do is go out and shoot everything that isn't a Homo sapiens. wildlife can live on its own without human interference if they'd stay out of it, let predators increase in numbers and control the populations in a more natural way, it would be far better. We don't need more hunters. We don't need hunting in town. And as far as useful things for homeowners, I've lost a lot of plants too. But, you know, when you plant a young plant of some sort, an ornamental in your garden, you need to protect it for a while, maybe a couple of years until it gets big enough to be sustainable. I had a heck of a problem getting Escalonia bushes established because the deer ate them to the ground constantly. Mm. But once I put fencing around them and let them grow up large, then the deer don't bother them anymore. So you have to be willing to understand the relationship that the deer have with the environment and their browsers. And so they go around eating a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And so your garden is prone to depredation by them unless you take steps to protect those young plants and let them get big enough where they can grow back the amount that gets eaten. And then there are the plants that you mentioned that are not favored by deer at all, and rhododendrons is one of them. And they're a large selection of rhododendron plants, which includes azaleas as well. And the deer don't bother those at all. And they're beautiful plants that you can keep small or let them grow into large tree-like plants. And so there's a lot of flexibility. I think people need to think more about how can we help the deer rather than we've got to get rid of these. So those are my comments, and I appreciate you putting this show on. Thank you very much.
Yeah, stand by, because I think this could be a useful dialogue. I mean, I absolutely agree, and I hope I made that clear, that part of the problem is the encroachment on wildlife habitat by humans. There's no question that if there was more wildlife habitat and humans hadn't overly populated, or populated as they have in any event, free of judgment, the North American continent, there would be more balance. There would be a place for the predators to keep the numbers and the dense population densities and within some form of balance, whatever that may be. But just looking at it from the standpoint of, you know, the urban dweller, I mean, not to put, I realize this puts the idea that humans have primacy over everything, and that has definitely led to problems. The idea, though, that we should just let them be, do you see any kind of problems with that, and just letting the deer numbers increase? There doesn't seem to be a definitive study on the deer numbers. I mean, I've got anecdotal evidence, and perhaps yours is equally anecdotal, but do you see, hypothetically, that if the numbers increase, that the conflicts, the disease, the drawing of the predators, and automobile collisions at some point would give you concern?
Well, I think definitely my information just comes from observation, from walking around the neighborhood and driving the city streets. And my observations say to me that the population is very much similar to what it was years ago. So I don't know if it's increasing, but I agree that it would be good if somebody would actually try to pin down the numbers a little bit and understand if they're increasing. I find that they move around in groups, not all one group. Usually you don't see more than three or four together, sometimes more, but they'll be around the neighborhood for several days doing this and that, and then all of a sudden they're kind of gone for a while, but then you see them in a different neighborhood. And so I think they're like that, but I think it would be useful for people to try to figure out what the population is in the immediate area of Astoria and other communities. And then also you mentioned road collisions, which is, you know, terrible for both the automobile, the driver, and the deer, of course. So I think there must be records of that. I assume the police department gets reports of any serious collision with an animal and probably documents that. So that there may be some information of that sort already available in the sheriff's department as well. But if not, there should be an effort to try to better document that. But around the city itself, you know, the speed limits and the nature of our street structure and all dictate that automobiles should be traveling rather slow. And so I've never had difficulty avoiding them there. Yeah. Now, out, as you leave town out, especially going out 30, Highway 30, you know, there's real dangers there. And you have to be aware that one of the worst times of day is just when it starts getting dark. That's when the deer often come out along the side of a highway. So you have to be aware of these things. And, you know, there's bound to be collisions. And you know, that to me isn't a reason to totally eliminate a particular species. It's just...
But it would be a reason for regulating or attempting to manage them. I mean, we have to deal with the reality of management. That's the onus. That's the moral and ethical responsibility, the legal responsibility that we have given the state of affairs. Would you agree with that?
It depends what you mean by management. You know, when we look at how wolves have been managed, it's mostly get rid of them. Same with coyotes, same with foxes, same with bobcats, mountain lions. All the things that eat deer other than humans are to be eliminated. And so I don't just, you'd have to describe the management in detail with it for me to say whether I agreed with it.
Yeah, I can't say there is any management. It doesn't look like
there is. Some areas where deer may be really a danger along the road, maybe some kind of fencing. You know, in the more populous states like California, they've done a lot to eliminate access of wildlife to the big highways. You go along Highway 80, they've fenced off lots of places, and they funnel them through underpasses under the highway so that they can get back and forth safely. And we owe it to them. If we're going to build big highways that intervene into the environment, then we ought to make them properly built with consideration for other forms of life.
I completely agree with you. But let me take on a couple of issues. He says, let the predators increase. And that does seem like the natural response. What would you say to the person that does not want cougars or, I guess, at some point perhaps wolves or coyotes or bobcats in the backyard? Because I hear about those stories from Oregon communities.
Well, as far as our local community, it's extremely rare to see any of those animals in the city of Astoria. There are others, obviously other smaller cities around and the fringes of some of the cities where there will be interaction with the wildlife. But if you don't really like that, then you should move into the core of the city. They don't come into the core.
Well, this conversation, of course, is not confined simply to Astoria, though that's the purview of my personal experience for the most part. But the reports of the cougars, I believe, have been in Seaside and Warrenton and then out in the hinterlands within Clatsop County and also in Bend. So it seems to me at some point the animals, if they haven't been to this city, they have been to other cities and those interactions. California's had situations where they've, you know, resulted in fatalities. Colorado has as well. So what would you say to the people that are concerned about, you know, the attraction of predators like cougar to cities, even if it hasn't happened yet? What would you say to them in terms of the management strategy?
Well, what I'd say to them is that you do have to think about where you like to live. And a lot of people think they want to live in the country. Mm-hmm. But then when they get there, they want to make it no longer the country. Mm-hmm. They want to make it more like the city. So if you don't like wildlife, and that includes predators, you shouldn't live out on the edge of town. You should move right into the core. If you live down on Exchange Street or Grand or something like that, you're not going to have mountain lions walking through town. It just doesn't happen. And the same in seaside. There's plenty of seaside that is basically concrete and asphalt roads and buildings. And that's not where the wildlife's going to really hang out. So if you don't want to interact with wildlife, stay away from the fringes. It's also people move out into the fringe areas and they're in danger of severe fires.
Mm-hmm.
And they just don't think of it. They see this house in a beautiful area and they want to live there, they think. But then they get there and all of a sudden they realize, oh, there's some problems. We need to change the whole environment around my place here. But that's the wrong approach. Go where the environment's right for you to begin with and don't keep moving out of the core of the city if you don't really want to be out in nature.
Caller raises an excellent point, both on the tendency, in the general sense, a tendency of human beings want to conform the environment to their expectations, urban expectations in this case, perhaps, rather than just conform their own lifestyle to the environment that they've moved into. And so I want to ask you another question about how do you feel about people feeding the deer, particularly in, you know, the cities like Warrenton or Astoria, or I don't know if they in Tillamook or other places in Tillamook County have that. How do you feel about that?
I think it's really bad to feed any wildlife, although I'll admit that my wife and I feed birds, and even that, you know, there's some issues with that, but it seems harmless enough to feed birds, but I'm not for feeding the little bunnies like people were doing down in Cannon Beach or wherever that episode was a couple months ago we were hearing about, but certainly not deer and feeding coyotes, trying to attract them in and things like that. That's the wrong thing to do. And I lived in the Lake Tahoe area for a long time, and bears were a real issue there, and they really had to clamp down and educate people on not making food available, and then the bears would leave the area. But wildlife will come in for the easy food, and if people are just careless about leaving stuff out that the deer or other wildlife will eat, they'll go for that. But to actually purposely feed these larger mammals is really not good for the health of the animals or the community. And I would, you know, if they can't, through education, get people to back off on that, then I guess there has to be penalties for people that are caught doing it, you know, fine them for feeding wildlife, you know, in an urban area. It's just not a good plan.
Yeah, there are laws in the books here in Astoria, I don't know about other areas, that prohibit the feeding of wildlife. I don't know if it's specifically deer. And with that in mind and what you said, would you favor enforcement of such laws to prohibit feeding of deer?
Yes, I would, but I'd rather try to first put on a really strong education campaign and get people to understand why, instead of them just trying to avoid a fine or you know, having to clean up trash along the side of the highway or something. I'd rather that they understood and actually embraced the idea, and so I'd give a shot at that first. But ultimately, I think you got to stop people from doing stuff like that because it's harmful to the community and it's harmful to the wildlife as well.
I'm looking at this article from the Daily Historian from November 16th of last year, and there's a wildlife named Herman Beiderbecke, and he said, he, I guess, has been consulted on that for Warrenton and Gearhart as well as here. And so there was an ordinance dating from 1985 that forbade the feeding of pigeons in Uniontown, but it was later amended to prohibit feeding of deer, elk, raccoons, possums, seagulls, bears, cougars, and coyotes in city limits. But there have been concerns, I guess, brought to or on the part of the city councilors dating back to 2012, and I know that contraception for bucks, you know, a vasectomy is about $5,000. It's about $1,000 to do, I birth control surgically or otherwise for the does. So that's not really a feasible number. But if we disagree on the premise that the deer are increasing, then that may not be a matter that is ripe yet, at least by consensus. It seemed like for a while there was a real problem with raccoons here, but that seems to have attenuated. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I actually don't see very many raccoons around. I've heard other people say that they've had them in their neighborhoods. They're very adaptable to the urban environment, and even larger cities can have them because they're small enough where they can find a place to hide during the day. But, again, it's they're coming in for the easy food. So if people keep their garbage in a tightly closed container and don't leave pet food out, those are the things that draw the raccoons in. They would move back to the forested fringes and stay there where they can make a living. And so I look to people to be more responsible about trying to prevent having attractive nuisances around their homes that bring these larger mammals in that really don't mix well in an urban environment.
Well, I certainly appreciate all your comments, and you've certainly given a great deal of thought, and I've made some notes to do some further research myself, and so I appreciate the call. And I guess there's just a couple minutes left. This is the conversation with John Orr. The topic today is the deer, what should be done, or something along those lines. I guess the premise of the question may be, the premise itself of the topic may be questioned if you don't believe that the deer numbers are rising or are interfering with, human-valued functions such as gardening, shrubs, plants, collisions, drawing predators of the city. So we have one point of view. It'd be good to, before the broadcast concludes, to get other points of view. So give us a call, 503-325-0010. That's 503-325-0010. And it's about 9:58. So please give us a call. Let's see what else we have here. I guess there have been... I keep tabs on deer diseases, and it seems like there are increasing outcrops of deer disease, and I don't know if that happens here, if that's going to happen here on the North Coast, but it is an example of how, much as we may love deer, we could, I suppose, love them to death if we don't allow either natural forces to control the numbers or our responsibilities, under the laws that regulate the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to manage the numbers. I know there are efforts to manage species all over the state. I think the last black-tailed deer management plan is dated from 2008. It's a bit out, but if there's anybody out there that has knowledge, that we have time for one quick call. It's coming up on 9:59. Otherwise, thanks for the program. Thanks for listening. Hopefully you are listening. Look, there's a call. Let's see. I'm going to be cutting it rather close here. We'll have to make it snappy. Yes, we have Friday Folk coming up at after news. News is at top of the hour. Conversation with John Orr. What's your quick question or comment?
I just wanted to talk about those accidents on the highway, which is another problem that deer and elk have, raccoons, opossums. Yeah. In the late summer, there are so many road kills around here. I'm on the Washington side, so I'm dealing with State Route 4, but it's the same problem over on Highway 30. There's so many people who move into this area from an urban environment and are not privy to the fact that there's wildlife out there trying to cross to get to water in the evening.
Yeah.
We need to teach our young people how to drive in deer country and elk country and so forth.
Yeah, I agree. It can end up really bad when you have a 150-pound animal come flying, or elk more, you know, like 400-pound animal flying through your windshield.
Literally.
It's a really good reason to drive at a slower rate so you have time to stop. We're going to have to call it a show. Thanks so much for your call, and thanks for listening, folks. And this will conclude a conversation with John Orr, and really appreciate had the opportunity to put this show on. And coming up, the news at 12:01. Oh, and this is KMUN 91.9 FM, KTCB, Tillamook 89.5, streaming live at coastradio.org. If you missed the show this week, then you can listen to it on coastradio.org on a podcast. You won't be able to call in, obviously.